Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper, published for the week of Sunday, November 7th, 2021. I am reading the articles on Thursday, November 11th, and I'll begin with the newest articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data. Tom Green County, as of November 10th, City of San Angelo. 25,082 positive cases reported. 19 new positive cases. Deaths, 467. 300 from Tom Green County and 167 from other counties. 19 currently hospitalized. 194 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker by Diane Pantaleo. Tom Green County has administered more than 115,002 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of November 9th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 1.4% from the previous week's tally of 113,418 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 44% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of November 9th. Christmas at Old Fort Concho returns after 2020 hiatus. Here's what's different in 2021 by John Tufts and Elena Edgen, published November 10th. Christmas at Old Fort Concho returns next month after taking a hiatus in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic. After being canceled for the first time in the event's history, organizers say San Angelo's biggest holiday gathering will return, but with some changes. Christmas at Old Fort Concho is on for December 3rd through the 5th, 2021, according to Bob Luthart, site manager for the historic fort. A full schedule of events was announced Wednesday, November 10th. There will be something for everyone. Food, shopping, entertainment, and history, Bluthart said during an earlier interview with the Standard Times. We're also going to make every accommodation we can to ensure health and safety. The 40th annual Christmas at Old Fort Concho celebration will not have the same familiar children's events, such as workshops and the art show. The cookie and gingerbread house decorating will happen, but in the quartermaster building, which has more room than the usual location in the hospital. It will also honor Sandy Whitley, who created the decorating event 20 years ago. Whitley passed away in September 2020. One thing to keep in mind is half of this event is outdoors, Bluthart said earlier. There's an automatic fail-safe in that you can keep your distance. Yes, the event does have hundreds, thousands of people, but it only gets overwhelmingly crowded at peak points. The peak time would likely be from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, Bluthart said, speaking from past experience. The event usually brings between 13,000 and 15,000 people to the fort. It also generates $50,000 to $60,000 in fundraising. The Santa House has adjusted their usual setup out of an abundance of caution to limit the spread of COVID-19. Children will sit on a bench in front of Santa Claus this year. There will still be goodie bags. With music, history, shopping, and more, we've rounded up the schedule to make it a little easier. A musical night in another century will take place from 7 to 9 p.m. Saturday in the Fort Concho stables as folks dance the evening away. Light refreshments will be available for purchase. Perhaps the most conspicuous attraction from year to year is the Winter Rendezvous on the parade grounds, which offers attendees authentic educational and exciting displays of military and civilian life, equipment, and activities from frontier days. Fort Concho will be hosting a Students' Day, allowing children to get an up-close look at it all Friday, December 3rd, as they tour the grounds from 9 to 11 a.m. and from noon to 2 p.m. Other annual events to look forward to include Christmas at Old Fort Concho Cookie Decorating Contest and Gingerbread House Contest. Entry forms and rules are available on the Fort Concho website. Admission prices for single-day passes are $7 for adults, $5 for seniors and military personnel, $3 for children ages 7 to 17, and children 6 and under get in free. Weekend passes are $14 for adults, $10 for seniors and military personnel, and $6 for children up to age 17. Friday, December 3rd, 3 to 8 p.m., Winter Rendezvous, Merchants, Buildings. 4 p.m., Historical Walking Tour. 5 p.m., Winter Rendezvous Retreat Ceremony. 5 to 8 p.m., Santa will be in the Santa House. Saturday, December 4th, 7:30 to 11 a.m., Lions Pancakes with Santa. 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., Winter Rendezvous, Merchants, Buildings. 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., Santa will be in the Santa House. 10 a.m., Winter Rendezvous Flag Raising Ceremony. 11:30 a.m., Gunfight in Old Santa Angela. 2 to 4 p.m., Santa will be in the Santa House. 2 p.m., Fort Concho Enterprise Baseball Game. 2:30 p.m., Gunfight in Old Santa Angela. 4 p.m., Historical Walking Tour. 4:30 p.m., Winter Rendezvous Retreat Ceremony. 5 to 7 p.m., Santa will be in the Santa House. 7 to 9 p.m., A Musical Night in Another Century, Music and Dancing. Sunday, December 6th, 9 to 10 a.m., Cowboy Chuck Wagon Breakfast. 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m., Winter Rendezvous Flag Raising Ceremony. 11 a.m., Winter Rendezvous Merchants Buildings. 1 to 3 p.m., Santa will be in the Santa House. 1 p.m., Historical Walking Tour. 2:30 p.m., Gunfight in Old Santa Angela. 3:30 p.m., Winter Rendezvous Retreat Ceremony. Seating is limited at all featured events. Tickets are sold on a first-come basis and are not exchangeable nor refundable. For more information, contact Special Events Coordinator Carol Cummings at 325-657-4441 or email events@fortconcho.com. Woman chased by pickup through San Angelo neighborhood leads to man's arrest, by Elena Edgen, published November 10th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after surveillance footage showed a pickup chasing a woman as she drove her vehicle, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On Monday, November 8th, police arrived to a domestic dispute in the 400 block of East Beauregard Avenue. A woman told officers she drove to her home on Junius Street and noticed a man in front of her house, records state. She drove around the block and the man started driving after her in a white pickup. Several times he attempted to run her off the roadway, she told police. The chase continued through a convenience store parking lot at Howard and Junius Streets, according to the affidavit. The man told officers he had texted the woman earlier that night, went to sleep, and did not leave his house. Videos from his driveway and the convenience store showed a man with a similar hairline driving the white pickup. The pickup returned to the residence at about 12:40 a.m., minutes after the woman called 911, records state. Timothy Darrell Martin, 49, was arrested Monday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a weapon and threats. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $45,000 bond as of 12:35 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. San Angelo man arrested after confronting housemate, hitting them with pistol. By Elena Edgen, published November 10th. Accusations at a San Angelo residence led to one person injured and one man in jail, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On Monday, November 8th, police arrived to a reported shooting in the 1700 block of Hassel Street. Officers noted a resident with a serious laceration to the left forehead, consistent with being shot or hit with a blunt object, records state. A woman in the residence told officers a man was upset with another resident because he believed they were trying to get into his room. The man said he would shoot the resident and entered their room, according to the affidavit. The resident told officers the man shot him. Two witnesses in the home said they did not hear gunshots, but did note the man seemed angry and had at least one gun, records state. Investigators interviewed the man, who said the resident kept trying to get into his room. When the man entered the resident's room, he punched him in the face. There were two 22 long rifle pistols in his vehicle, one of which had blood on it, according to the affidavit. Andrew Joe Gonzalez, 34, was arrested Monday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $45,000 bond as of 12:45 a.m. Wednesday, according to online jail records. San Angelo Central hopes to turn things around in playoff opener, by Charles Bryce, published November 10th. It's a fresh start for the San Angelo Central High School football team as the Bobcats open the playoffs with the Class 6A Division II Bi-District Showdown on the road against El Paso Eastlake for the second straight year. Central ended the regular season at 4-6 overall and 2-4 in District 2-6A, following a 49-14 loss on the road against Abilene High last week. The Bobcats finished fourth in the district. Meanwhile, Eastlake went 9-1 overall and 6-1 in 1-6A for a second-place finish behind E.P. Franklin. The Falcons blew out El Paso Coronado 35-3 at home last week. Kickoff for Friday's game is scheduled for 7 p.m. Central Time in the Socorro Activities Complex in El Paso. Radio coverage will be on KIXY 94.7 FM. The winner faces either Byron Nelson or Weatherford in the area round next week. This is the 12th straight season for Central to be in the postseason. In order to keep the season alive, the Bobcats will need to play a stronger game than they did last week against Abilene. "It was a tough game for us," Central coach Kevin Crane said. "Obviously, Abilene High is a really good football team. They played well, and they deserve to win the game. They played better than us. We just didn't execute very well on offense. We did some things well, but we just couldn't do it consistently enough. And obviously, defensively, we had a hard time stopping their running back. He's a good player, and really that quarterback, too. He played well, and he was real accurate with the football when he was throwing it." In Crane's first season as head coach, the Bobcats took their lumps as injuries mounted along the way. The Bobcats are hoping they'll benefit from playing a tough schedule. "I thought our district was much improved this year from last year," Crane said. "Midland Legacy was better. Permian was just as good. Friendship was better. Abilene High was much improved, and Odessa High was much improved. I felt like our whole district improved." "We also played some good teams in non-district with Austin Vandegrift and Amarillo Tascosa. I do hope that helps us here in the playoffs, and I hope we can go out to El Paso and play well and try to keep it going one week at a time." Central starting quarterback Tyler Hill got hurt in the second quarter last week, and fellow junior Ben Emler went the rest of the way. Hill is questionable for Friday's game, and it could be a game-time decision, Crane said. "What happened in the regular season doesn't matter now, as long as the Bobcats have learned from their losses." "We're, just like everybody else," Crane said. "Obviously, we wish we had a little more momentum going into this game than what we do, but it's a fresh start, and we've got an opportunity here to go play a good Eastlake team and see what we can do. It's a do-or-die situation, and I think our kids are excited about the opportunity to go play in a playoff game." Over 100 schools put up their pads, and they don't get another opportunity. "We can't wish it away. We've got to make the best of it. Hopefully, we go out there and play well. I know the last time we played out there, we traveled real well and played pretty good against Montwood in a 34-29 win on September 3rd. And we're going to have to do that again against Eastlake, which is playing some good football right now." Central defeated Eastlake 54-35 in last year's playoff opener, but the Falcons look a lot stronger in 2021. "They've got a really good running back in Elia Urebe, who is a real strong runner. He's got good speed, but he's a powerful runner. A lot of people say he might be the best player in the city of El Paso, so that's saying quite a bit, Crane said. He was a junior last year and had some pretty good games against us last year. Obviously, he's doing some good things this year as well. They move him around a lot. They play him at running back most of the time, but they'll play him at running back sometimes like a wildcat quarterback type situation, and they also play him at receiver some. Crane says Eastlake senior quarterback Sebastian Randon, 1,639 yards passing, 19 touchdowns, is also having a great season, and he distributes the ball to a talented receiving core. They've got a good team offensively, and then defensively, they're playing really well, Crane said. They're getting the ball and flying around and making a lot of tackles. The defensive front is really aggressive, and they're real multiple on defense. They show quite a bit of different looks to their opponents. They're a good football team. You're not 9-1 for no reason. The Bobcats know the formula for success. It's just a matter of execution and cutting down on mistakes. We've got to do the things it takes to win football games, the Central coach said. It hasn't changed in 100 years. We've got to eliminate our penalties on both sides of the ball. We've got to take care of the ball and not turn it over, whether that's fumbles or interceptions. We've got to score in the red zone, and then defensively, we've got to tackle better, and we've got to play better on third down. We've got to get off the field on third down. We're giving too many teams opportunities to stay on the field. That's what it takes to play winning football, and our guys are well aware of it, and we've done it at times. Crane says the Bobcats must perform well on offense, defense, and special teams, like they did in a 41-17 blowout at home against Midland High on October 7th. Due to COVID, there were no fans in the stands for the Central Eastlake Showdown last year. Music was piped in to make things seem a little more normal. That won't be the case Friday, as restrictions have been lifted in a stadium with a capacity of 11,000 fans. I enjoy playing in their stadium, Crane said. Obviously, it's a long 400-mile drive, but man, they treat us really well when we get there. It's a fun atmosphere and a fun stadium to play in. I expect it to be a good crowd, and I think it'll be fun for our players and coaches. Hill has thrown for 1,769 yards and 9 touchdowns. He's been picked off 7 times. The Bobcats QB has a team-high 777 yards rushing and 9 touchdowns. Running backs Bobby Navarrete, 562 yards, 7 touchdowns, and Darius Floyd, 436 yards, 7 touchdowns, are second and third, respectively. Central's top receivers are Jacob English, 609 yards, 6 touchdowns, Trevor Scott, 254 yards, 2 touchdowns, Kevon Rice, 251 yards, Caden Box, 240 yards, and Jaden Gibson, 224 yards, 1 touchdown. Defensively, the Bobcats are led by Ty Casey, 74 tackles, 46 solos. Bryson McNutt, 59 tackles, 40 solos. Jaden Lyman, 53 tackles, 30 solos. Jacoby Yates, 50 tackles, 39 solos. Landon Cowley, 44 tackles, 25 solos. And Austin Johnson, 43 tackles, 25 solos. San Angelo's Salvation Army returns with Red Kettle Challenge online fundraiser by Elena Edgen, published November 9th. The San Angelo Salvation Army has issued a challenge to people this year in hopes of reaching over $100,000, according to a news release. You will see friendly bell ringers and red kettles at area storefronts and retailers, said Major General Angel Cauldron of the Salvation Army. However, the Red Kettle Challenge makes it easy for people to set up their own virtual kettles from the comfort of their own homes. The challenge involves people signing up and setting fundraising goals. They can share their fundraiser link with others who can donate to their challenge. A virtual kettle provides a great way for people to show their support for the Salvation Army without having to leave the house, Cauldron said. Every dollar raised through the Red Kettle campaign makes it possible for us to provide shelter. For people willing to accept the challenge, sign up at SalvationArmyTexas.org/RKC Team Form and fill out the form. In 2020, local kettles raised $68,000. They hope to raise $107,000 this year, according to the release. Veterans honored with parade through downtown San Angelo, by Colin Murphy, published November 8th. One of the longest and most popular parades of the year was held Saturday as hundreds of spectators turned out in downtown San Angelo to honor those who have served in the armed forces during the annual Veterans Day parade. The event included marching bands, floats, reenactors, first responders, and other parade participants. The parade came 5 days before Veterans Day, which is officially observed on November 11th. The holiday honors the service of all U.S. military veterans. The parade featured a variety of youth groups from area schools and organizations, including the Lakeview and Central High School's Air Force Junior ROTC and marching bands. Many local veteran support groups also led floats down the parade route through the downtown district. San Angelo Mayor Brenda Gunter made an appearance, waving to the crowd from the top of a Jeep. Several local fire departments and other first responders also participated in the event. New church development aims to revitalize part of downtown San Angelo, by Colin Murphy, published November 6th. While many churches were struggling to adapt to the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, one religious institution in downtown San Angelo was implementing plans to expand their outreach to the community with a new development that aims to bring people together. The First Christian Church on Oak Street is only a few weeks away from unveiling a new outdoor space and revamped interior facility that church leaders hope will reinvigorate their downtown location and make it a destination for years to come. T.J. Shoup York, senior minister at First Christian Church, said the new development has two primary aspects. The first is a new outdoor space, while the second is a newly renovated interior facility. 2.5 years ago, we went through a 40-day prayer process, Shoup York said. We sought God's guidance, and we felt God calling us to claim downtown as our location to do ministry. A couple of things came out of that. The first was to be the backyard of downtown and to use our space as a connection point for businesses and nonprofits in our community. They could come and use it as a gathering space or as a meeting space and as a place for fellowship. Really, any way we can be a gift to our community. According to Shoup York, the main goal of the outdoor space is to provide a place where people who frequent established institutions nearby, such as employees from Shannon Medical Center, students from the Central High School freshman campus, and other people employed downtown, can gather and relax. The second main part of the redevelopment is utilizing space inside the First Christian Church and aims to provide enhanced opportunities for continued community outreach. The inside spot is called the table, is really the heart of who we are, Shoup York said. We wanted to create a massive gathering space where people can come and build those connections and have those relationships and those fellowships. We believe that, as a church, it's our job to be a gift to the community, and we think we can find a way to use our space by updating it to gift the community with a nice upscale place to come and do anything that folks can imagine to do. The development includes the new outdoor space called the backyard, a new ministry space and food pantry, the indoor space called the table, a renovated sanctuary, a new chapel, and another outdoor gathering space for events and concerts. The grand opening of the new development is scheduled for November 21st at the First Christian Church, located at 29 North Oak Street. The event will include worship services at 9 and 11 a.m., with brunch being served at 10 a.m. San Angelo man charged with kidnapping three people at gunpoint, and Shooting Woman in Vehicle by Elena Edgen, Colin Murphy, and John Tufts, published November 9th. A standoff between law enforcement and a man charged in kidnapping three people by gunpoint ended peacefully Tuesday afternoon after police, deputies, and a SWAT team converged outside a Northside San Angelo apartment building. "This really was a fast-developing situation," said Nick Hanna, Tom Green County Sheriff. Hanna said the sheriff's office had responded to calls concerning an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon early Tuesday, November 9th, in the area of U.S. 87 North and Apache Lane. A news release issued later that day stated that after deputies arrived at Apache Lane, they received reports of a shooting victim at Shannon Medical Center, 120 East Harris. Through the investigation, it was learned that an aggravated kidnapping had happened. "Some people were taken against their will at gunpoint," Hanna said. Investigators identified Dwayne Tatum, also known as Dwayne Evans, age 33, as a possible suspect. Officials said Evans arrived at a San Angelo apartment complex where he kidnapped three people at gunpoint and forced them into a vehicle, instructing one of the victims to drive out of San Angelo and north onto U.S. 87 into Tom Green County. As the vehicle approached the intersection of U.S. Highway 87 and Apache Lane, Evans discharged the firearm, striking one of his kidnapping victims, a news release stated. Two of the kidnapping victims were able to escape the vehicle, leaving only the suspect and the shooting victim, a news release stated. Officials said Evans drove the shooting victim to Shannon Medical Center and left her at the emergency room where she was treated for two gunshot wounds. Investigators from the Tom Green County Sheriff's Office found Evans at an apartment complex, West 31st Street. Evans barricaded himself inside the apartment and refused to surrender to law enforcement, a news release stated. "We tried to make contact with him," Hanna said. "We knew that he was armed. We had some information that this was a public safety issue, so we set up a perimeter." At around 1 p.m., an armed vehicle and SWAT team could be seen outside the apartment complex. Law enforcement officials were observed by a reporter carrying rifles and holding shields. Other members of law enforcement arrived, which included the San Angelo Police Department, Texas Department of Public Safety, the Center for Tactical Medicine, and Tom Green County Constables. By about 2 p.m., officials had placed barricades around two blocks of Chadburn Street. The Tom Green County Sheriff's Special Response Team, SRT, and Crisis Negotiation Unit, CNU, arrived. Hanna said a hostage negotiator was able to convince Tatum to surrender peacefully. At about 2:16 p.m., law enforcement officials appeared to be placing someone into a Tom Green County Sheriff's Office patrol vehicle. "We're pleased that no one, including the suspect, was hurt and no shots were fired," Hanna said, who noted Tatum would be charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, with more charges pending an investigation. "I anticipate we'll have aggravated kidnapping charges to follow," Hanna said. At about 3:31 p.m., Tatum was booked into the Tom Green County Detention Center and is charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and aggravated kidnapping. He remained in jail as of 4 p.m. Tuesday in lieu of a $75,000 bond. A second unnamed individual was taken into custody on felony warrants along with Tatum, according to Hanna. Hanna said the gunshot victim was treated at Shannon Hospital and later released. "We've waited so long for this," say parents. San Angelo children receive COVID-19 vaccine by John Tufts, published November 9th. 9-year-old Catalina Ojeda from San Angelo said she felt only a little nervous before receiving a vaccination Monday for COVID-19. More importantly, she said, getting the shot didn't hurt. "It felt like my friend was pinching me," Catalina said, holding a lollipop while seated in the waiting area at Shannon Hospital's vaccine clinic, 3501 Knickerbocker Road, which was crowded that afternoon. On Monday, November 8th, dozens of children were vaccinated against COVID-19 in San Angelo. It was the first day such vaccinations were available to kids ages 5 to 11 at Shannon Hospital. "I was not scared," said Patricia Ojeda on Monday, who is 6 years old and Catalina's younger sister. "I was happy to get vaccinated because I missed my birthday when I had COVID last year." Shannon Hospital made the decision to begin vaccinations last week after a federal advisory committee unanimously recommended children ages 5 to 11 receive Pfizer-BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine. "I almost cried when I heard the news," said Simona Rique, a San Angelo mother who brought her 5-year-old son, Thomas, to get vaccinated Monday. "We've been waiting so long for this." Health officials in San Angelo have overwhelmingly recommended adults and now children get vaccinated for the coronavirus. "This is important," said Dr. Doug Schultz, chief medical officer at Shannon Clinic on Monday. "It's another group of people who can be vaccinated against COVID-19, which we couldn't do before." Fully vaccinating 1 million children would prevent about 57,000 cases of the virus and about 200 hospitalizations, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. While positive cases of COVID-19 have dwindled in the community over the past few weeks, the virus has continued to inflict a deadly toll in the Concho Valley, and particularly for those who remain unvaccinated. Two Tom Green County men in their 40s and 50s died Monday from coronavirus, bringing the total number of deaths to 467 people, 300 from Tom Green County and 167 from other counties, according to local health officials. Both men were not vaccinated, according to a City of San Angelo news release. "The message is really a simple one," Schultz said. "Vaccines, in my mind, are a lot like wearing a seatbelt. You might not be in a wreck, but if you are, you're better protected. That's not just this vaccine, but all vaccines." 9-year-old Aubrey Groves, a fourth grader at Crockett Elementary, said she wanted to get vaccinated Monday after seeing members of her family get sick from the virus. "I really take COVID seriously," Aubrey said. "I really don't want to have to go through that, and I don't want to give others COVID." Schultz, who specialized as a pediatrician, said while COVID-19 is usually more severe in older adults, more than 8,000 children have been hospitalized for the virus, and up to 700 children have died from it in the United States. "It's still a serious infection," Schultz said, and noted children can spread the virus to grandparents who have a greater risk of dying after getting infected. "It's much safer to prevent it than any side effects that could happen from the vaccine," Schultz said. "Though the vaccines carry some risk for children, their benefits are greater," concluded a CDC advisory committee on immunization practices made up of vaccine and immune system experts from universities and medical schools across the country. In several small trials, Pfizer-BioNTech, which makes the vaccine, reported no serious side effects connected with the shots. "The studies on children show this is a very effective vaccine," Schultz said. "It's 91% effective. The side effects are very minimal. A sore arm, and they might feel a little bad for a day, just like adults with very similar side effects." "I feel fine," said Thomas Rique, age 5, after getting vaccinated. "It only hurt like 1%. Well, maybe 1% more than the flu vaccine, so just 2%. Thomas's mother, Simona Rique, said she wanted to vaccinate her son to protect not only him, but as a duty she felt she owed to her community. "We have rights, but we also have obligations for living in a society, and we have to fulfill these obligations during a public health emergency," Rique said. For Dr. Carolina Ojeda, who is Patricia and Catalina's mother, the coronavirus has played a significant role in her life, both personally and professionally. Ojeda specializes in internal medicine at Shannon Hospital and said she had lost both family and patients during the pandemic. "I got a little emotional," Ojeda said, while watching her daughters get vaccinated. "We've been waiting for a long, long time. Just having my girls be able to receive the vaccine, I'm going to sleep tonight feeling very happy as a parent." A spokesperson for Shannon Hospital said those seeking more information on vaccine guidelines can visit the Shannon COVID-19 information page at www.shannonhealth.com/COVID-19 or www.cdc.gov. The Shannon Vaccine Clinic is open Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m., Tuesday and Friday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. HEB's Feast of Sharing will not be in person this year. Here's what it's doing instead. By Elena Edgen, published November 5th. Texas's most popular grocery store will not have their annual Thanksgiving feast in person this year, according to an HEB news release. Instead, HEB will use mobile kitchens to donate more than 340,000 meals to 18 Texas food banks and give funds to more than 45 hunger relief organizations in the state. While we're not able to celebrate in person this year, thanks to our dedicated nonprofit partners, we're still able to touch the lives of so many across our great state and celebrate together in spirit, said Winnell Heron, Group Vice President of Public, Diversity, and Environmental Affairs. Here are some of the region's food banks that HEB will donate to. Concho Valley Regional Food Bank, San Angelo. Food Bank of West Central Texas, Abilene. South Plains Food Bank, Lubbock. West Texas Food Bank, Odessa. Winners announced from the 2021 In Plain Air Texas competition. By Barbara Rollo, special to the San Angelo Standard-Times, published November 5th. 100 years ago, artists and teachers from as far away as the Chicago Art Institute found their way to the tiny community of Cristoval, just south of San Angelo, where the emerald spring waters of the South Concho River were calling them to come paint outdoors. In Plain Air, Texas 2021 acknowledged those long-ago painters with a week like no other in the United States and added the allure of authentic working ranches. Something magical happens when you have 31 award-winning artists ride in from 16 states and saddle up with their easels to paint on 14 private ranches in West Texas. Add a week of perfect fall sunny weather, and 400 paintings later, you have one of the most successful years yet in the 8-year history of In Plain Air, Texas. Over half of the artists arrived early to spend 2 nights hosted on ranches to paint and warm up to the Texas scenery. And though these were non-competition paintings, they were hard to resist and resulted in many pre-event sales. During the week, all the artists were welcomed on 7 more ranches closer to town and were able to spend 5 days total on those ranches. Scenery ranged from dry creek beds to a high vista of the Edwards Plateau Divide. A new event for 2021, Field Ranch Experience with the Artists, brought ticket holders in from all over Texas to spend the day artist hopping on ranch vehicles to watch the EPAT artists paint. A mid-afternoon reception showcased the day's works with the Field Ranch Favorite People's Choice Award, sponsored by Western Art Collector Magazine. Painting sales were brisk, but only after the ranchers selected their favorites to purchase. The state's highlight is the Art Collector's Stampede Awards Party and Sale at the Stables Building on Fort Concho, a National Historic Landmark. Awards judge Tim Newton awarded over $35,000 in cash and magazine ad prizes. Plain Air Magazine is a major award sponsor for In Plain Air, Texas. Michael Obermeyer of Laguna Beach, California, was juror for this year's artists and will be the 2022 awards judge. 2021 In Plain Air, Texas winners. Grand prize, the Elta Joyce Murphy Award, Christine Lashley. Best Body of Work Award, Richard Sneary. Artist Choice Award, Matt Barber Kennedy. Second Place Award, Bill Farnsworth. Third Place Award, Spencer Meager. Museum Purchase Award, Mark Shasha. Judges Award of Distinction, Christopher Leeper. Texas Ranchland Award, John Caggiano. Texas Precious Water Award, Susie Baker. Spirit of San Angelo Award, Brianne Brown. Ken Landon Water Lily Award, Olena Babick. Best Architectural Award, Matt Barber Kennedy. Texas Artist Camp Award, Gary Tucker. Field Ranch Favorite Award, Nancy Tankersley. Many Pearls of the Conchos, Four Judges' Choice Awards. Christopher Leeper, Jeff Williams, Olena Babick, Tim Beal. Artist spent the final morning of the event painting at the 68th San Angelo Roping Fiesta, an iconic West Texas tradition. Action-filled roping painting awards are Roping Paint Out, Four Judges' Choice Awards, Stuart White, Antoine Ramar, Yong Hong Zhang, Kathleen Hudson. Roping Paint Out Open Category, Three Judges' Choice Awards, Bruce Bingham, Karen Kunikuye, Kyle Ma. Roping Paint Out Best San Angelo Artist Award, Yuki Kuniyuki. The artists donate a portion of every painting sale to event host, the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts, directly supporting their children's educational outreach programs that touch over 35,000 youth annually. They also found time to visit all 17 elementary schools in San Angelo and paint in the International Water Lily Gardens as art classes from area high schools and private schools came to watch and meet them. A total of 197 paintings were sold through the week by the 31 artists, and final tabulations of sales are expected to be the best year in the history of In Plein Air Texas, one of the premier plein air competitions in the country. The event is known for its hospitality and art sales, averaging over $200,000 annually. Barbara Rollo is the coordinator and co-chair of In Plein Air Texas. Email her at paint@inpleinairtexas.com. Congress approves Interstate 14, expands to 5 states in infrastructure bill. Here's What's Next, by Elena Egan, published November 10th. As part of the historic Build Back Better Plans infrastructure bill approved by Congress, the Interstate 14 corridor expansion has been passed and is pending President Joe Biden's signature. This marks a big moment for San Angelo, which is the largest Texas city without an interstate. Local officials had much to say about the project's movement. Both the city and county have worked tirelessly for years to advance recognition of the I-14 corridor and to move it through the legislative process, said Guy Andrews, Economic Development Director for San Angelo. I-14 is anticipated to intersect with I-27 in San Angelo, so this is a real game changer for our ability to attract businesses and industry to San Angelo, Tom Green County, and the Concho Valley. Mayor Brenda Gunter added that this is crucial to San Angelo's growth and ability to get resources such as fuel, food, and fiber. This expansion will include a route extension west to San Angelo and Midland, Odessa, and interstate connections to the Port of Corpus Christi, the Port of Houston, the ports at Beaumont and Port Arthur, and the Port of Gulfport. San Angelo and Tom Green County have a long history of advocacy for our area to be part of the national interstate highway system, said Steve Floyd, Tom Green County judge. This will allow phased improvements along the corridor that supports economic, military, safety, and mobility initiatives. As for what is next, the interstate's expansion will cross 5 states, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia. The I-14 Gulf Coast Strategic Highway Coalition will need to work with state departments on final route selection, environmental clearance, selection of priority projects, and funding, according to the release. Don't be afraid of this arachnid. Bold jumping spiders are a tiny bundle of personality. By Michael Price, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published November 8th. If you have been a follower of this column for any length of time, you have read about my opinions on favoritism multiple times, whether it be a movie, a food group, music, or even a different animal species. Well, once again, I would like to write about another one of my favorites. This time, an agile little creature with four pairs of legs. Jumping spiders are a large and diverse group of spiders that can be observed throughout the United States and Mexico. Taxonomically speaking, this family is represented by 45 genera and over 100 species in Texas alone. The specimens that are best known in this area are the 15 species that belong to the genus Phidippus, with the most commonly observed species being Phidippus audax, otherwise known as the bold jumping spider. A spider with the appearance of a bodybuilder. Bold jumping spiders, like other species of arachnids, have a body that consists of two parts, the cephalothorax and the abdomen, as well as the customary eight legs, although the legs are much hairier than most other species. The front two legs are by far the longest and heaviest, and that characteristic, coupled with the abdomen typically being a much more slender than the cephalothorax, gives this spider the appearance of a miniature bodybuilder. The dorsal coloration is mostly black, and there is usually a large light spot in the center of the upper side of the abdomen. This spot is generally white in adults, while in juveniles it can be yellow or orange in coloration. Females are slightly larger in size than males, reaching a total body length of up to 3/4 of an inch, while males only attain a size of 1/2 inch. There are a few characteristics that can be utilized to distinguish bold jumpers from other species of spiders. One of these characteristics is the eye arrangement. In the Phidippus species, the eyes on the very front of the body are quite large, almost giving this spider a humanoid look about it. By adding to this appearance of hair tufts, much like eyebrows, above the front eyes, and the resemblance is just that much more apparent. The other six eyes are much smaller and are arranged in a square-shaped area behind the front eyes. Another characteristic is the coloration of the chelicerae, which is basically just a big word for the front jaw area. The chelicerae is brightly colored with an iridescent blue, or more commonly in Texas, an iridescent green. As the name implies, this species of spider is capable of jumping to either escape a perceived predator or to ambush its prey. It has been estimated that jumping spiders can leap up to 10 times the length of their body. Generally, they move in quick, jerky lateral movements, only using the ability of leaping for the reasons mentioned above. This species of spider is an eloquent hunter, utilizing the vision of its large eyes, leaping ability, and robust body size to overpower many types of smaller invertebrates, including many that are considered to be either harmful or a nuisance. Prey items include flies, boll weevils, tobacco budworms, boll worms, and leaf worms. The boll jumping spider inhabits many different habitats, and it is often found in and around human dwellings. The facts that they are black in coloration, many people naturally assume that any black spider is a black widow, are not very shy and can leap large distances, make many people fear this beautiful and harmless little insect eater, and many are killed needlessly. If one is to overcome any natural or unnatural fear of spiders, this minute little bundle of personality is a prime candidate to watch and enjoy. And now, here is the column by Allison Watkins. Protect your plants from fall freezes in the Concho Valley. It looks like the first hard freeze of the season isn't predicted to happen in the immediate future, but will likely come before too long. Now that it's dipping into the 40s at night, it's time to start getting plants ready for winter. First, bring in tropicals and houseplants that have been out for the warm season. Plants like tropical hibiscus and bougainvillea can usually be cut back and overwintered in a garage, but a hobby greenhouse or brightly lit room inside the home would be better. Depending on how cold and early the first freeze is, some gardeners choose to cover their warm season vegetables and perennials to extend production and flowering. This is usually worth it if the first cold spell is short-lived and it warms up for a while afterward. But when cold temperatures set in for the long term, it's usually best to give up on the tomatoes and mums and plant winter vegetables and flowers. When covering plants, the key is to cover as much ground as possible to utilize heat rising from the soil at night. Don't cinch the covering around the stems, but drape it over like a tent all the way to the ground. Cardboard boxes or large plastic tubs work well. Some commonly used evergreen plants are only marginally hardy here in the Concho Valley, like rosemary, cast iron plant, pittosporum, and palm trees. If there is a particularly hard freeze, usually later in winter, it is helpful to cover them if possible. Better yet, plant them in more protected spots. Microclimates, like up against the home or protected from the north wind. Overall, the two best things to do for plants to protect them from cold temperatures is to water before a hard freeze and apply thick mulch. Wood mulch helps insulate the roots and can sometimes even mean the difference between coming back the next spring or not for tender perennials like Pride of Barbados and Lantana. For heat-loving plants like Pride of Barbados, push the mulch back away from the covering of the roots in the spring so the sun can warm the soil and help it grow back sooner. For more discussion on preparing for winter, join us for a Lunch and Learn on Friday, November 19th at 12 p.m., hosted by the People Plant Connection. The cost to attend is $5, and location is the PPC Studio at 416 South Oak Street in San Angelo. For more info, contact Susan Stanfield at 325-656-3104. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.